I'm Katie.
And I'm Steve. And this is the City of Reading Podcast.
Today, we speak with City of Reading Airports Manager Jim Wadley about how airport operations work here in Reading and ongoing efforts to secure more flights to additional locations.
Jim is fairly new to Reading, but has a wealth of knowledge about airports and flying and has big ideas for growth and change. He comes with an impressive resume from working on the tarmac for United on small aircraft to joining the Marines and passing his air traffic control test with flying colors. He has a background in aviation management and led key growth and development efforts at two municipal Bay Area airports before moving here to Reading.
He is motivated to make big improvements here and has all the skills to make sure that things are done right. We are very excited to interview him and hear all about what he has planned for Reading.
We also have an exciting airport announcement that the direct flight to LAX is coming back starting in March. We are recommending that people only travel if they need to and not fly if they are feeling unwell, but this is a great sign that United believes in the health of our economy and proves that direct flights do work here in Reading.
Do you have any feedback about the Reading airports? Do you fly out of Reading? Or why don't you fly out of Reading? We would love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@cityofreading.org.
My name is Jim Wadley, and I'm the airports manager for the City of Reading. And what I do is I oversee the, all aspects of the city's two airports, which include Reading Municipal Airport, or RDD, as a lot of people are familiar with, and then Benton Airpark, which has an identifier of Oscar 85. And so basically what I do on a day-to-day basis is, making sure that the airport is safe and compliant and efficient and that we maintain a healthy enterprise fund, which is really important to understand.
And Jim, what is the relationship between the airport and the City of Reading? How does that factor in both financially and just kind of in general? What's that relationship like?
That's actually a really good question, and I don't think a lot of people understand that it actually is, there is some separation. So the Airport Enterprise Fund is a fund that is obviously for the airport, and the city has its general fund. And the Enterprise Fund actually is operated very much like a business. Our services that are provided at the airport get judged like a business would. And, we offer facilities to, like, for example, renting a ticket counter for airlines or car rental counter, hangar space, office space. So if the services are good at the airport, then the airport's going to see more users. That's really been my primary objective since I started a little more than a year and a half ago. So when I'm not busy meeting federal and state directives, I'm constantly promoting economic development with the users, and that includes the community. And not a minute goes by wasted. With our small but mighty team, we get a lot accomplished.
That's super interesting. And Jim, from those funding sources that you mentioned, are taxpayer dollars part of that as well that go to help support the airport, or is the funding strictly from those avenues you mentioned?
No, it's strictly going to be user fees and rentals, like leases, whether they're license agreements that are month to month or long-term lease agreements. There's no tax dollars whatsoever. It's all strictly user fees.
And Jim, why would somebody consider flying out of Reading as opposed to driving to Sacramento?
Well, I get that question a bit. We really have data that, using some assumptions of how much a vehicle costs and how many miles per gallon and just the normal wear and tear in the parking fees at other airports. For example, Sacramento is $9 a day to $18 a day. And, you really have to start adding up all those costs and see, is it worth it? Because you can get an attractive airfare, but by the time you start adding up everything, you really are losing on.
People don't factor in the time that they're taking to drive to Sacramento too, right? I mean, that's like a 2.5 hour drive. If you're paying yourself your average wage, that can certainly add up. It's 2.5 hours each way as well, right? It's not wear and tear on your vehicle, but it is your time away from your family, time away from business needs.
So that's exactly right, because you do have more time away from your family when you have to travel by car and then by air. So, you know, I'm one of those that if I got in late at Sacramento, I would have to stay at a hotel. I can't drive at night. I just get too tired. And so to drive back 2 or more hours is really takes away. There's something to say to coming into Reading and driving 15 minutes and getting home. When I look at this objectively, I can really see convenience as the main factor. For example, with the LA service spooling back up again, you know, it offers more options to move around and connect. And so it's not just SFO now. We actually have another way to move around and connect. So whether you're traveling for leisure, an important family matter or business, you know, having more destinations is actually of greater value now. So it's not just SFO, it's now LAX. So it's another reason to take a look at Reading and see if it works.
And Jim, one of the things we hear a lot when folks are talking about flying out of Reading and the pros and cons is around price and reliability. Can you just talk us through on the pricing front, how are those flights priced? How does that get determined? Is that a decision that you're making or the airport's making, or does that come directly from the carrier, in this case, United?
So that's a really good question. The best way to address that question really involves a lack of competition with United. So they can set their airfare whatever they want. And if you contrast this with Sacramento and SFO, since there's multiple carriers at both those airports, they must be competitive with each other. And particularly if there's a low cost or ultra low cost carrier serving that market, they really have to drive down their fares. But we do know that due to the proximity of Reading to Sacramento, United has learned that they need to keep their airfare in line within reasonable amount to be able to retain passengers here in Reading. So this is why I'm so intrigued with air service. Air service development is actually a very intricate puzzle, and I intend to crack that code. You know, we do have a very large catch basin here. In my opinion, we have the ability to use our own community to acquire more service. Having said that, I'm focused on improving the experience in the terminal and aggressively seeking out new service opportunities for our community. And I aim to do that by recommending attractive incentive packages that we're allowed to do to help draw in other airlines and grow these destinations. Like I mentioned, we can't control, you know, ticket costs and weather. We can certainly enhance the experience in the terminal. And I am trying to make things hassle-free and nowadays with COVID, touch-free. So those are some of the things I have my sights set on, and you know, but my main objective is really enhancing that experience, and you know, and try to give people a compelling reason to fly Reading and, you know, fly local.
What I'm hearing is the Reading Airport can do some things on the back end to get competition and some other airlines into the space, but really, at the end of the day, we can't control the ticket prices. Those are controlled by the airliners themselves.
Yeah, and things do get misconstrued sometimes, and when there's a delay or a bag problem, and you know, the airport's usually the first in the crossfires. But what I try to explain to folks is we offer the facilities by which, you know, businesses will want to operate, and airlines are one of them. So, you know, the airline is really responsible for their operation, and my job is to support them. And so we do everything we can to make sure that everything's working right, and we're getting the proper messages out too.
Okay, that's great. And that kind of provides a good segue into a next question, which is talking about the process behind securing a new flight. There is the excitement about the possibility for a Denver location, but how is that decision made? What goes into that process? How does even Reading go about acquiring a new destination?
Okay, that's great. I mean, this question really makes me smile because, well, first of all, it's an exciting mission of mine. The fact that we're pursuing Denver using regional jets is very exciting. Last month, we brought an item forward to council requesting authorization to apply for a small community air service development grant. So it's also, you'll hear me or some others say SCASD for short. So we wanted to apply for a SCASD grant in an amount roughly of $1.2 million. we, in that staff report, we had mentioned that, you know, other successful applications generally will have like a 20% local match. So this means that we essentially are telling the Department of Transportation, we're committed to matching local funds. It's not all their funds. We have some commitment level of our own. And we recommended to the, that the general fund cover this local match, but we said that we are going to work with our partners in the community to create alternative funding to help offset that local match so that it's not impacting the general fund the full amount. Hopefully we can get the community to kind of help with that. But we aim to come back to council for final approval if we are awarded the grant. Right now, what we're doing is we're seeking letters of support from the community to add to our application package and to help make it more attractive to show, you know, if you help us with this application, this is basically, it's a revenue guarantee. We're committed to using that service. And that's what the Department of Transportation wants to see. You know, they want to see that these funds that they're giving are going to be put to good use. So like I said, these funds are going to be used for a revenue guarantee to start a new service with United to Denver International.
So we're asking permission to apply for a grant that would give us funding. If we were to get that grant, do we then just pay the airline to come? Is that really what it's all about? Is it about money? You just say, okay, we have $1.2 million to secure this flight. Will you connect us to Denver? And then the airline says, yes, we will. How does that piece work?
Yeah, so we definitely, before we applied, we had to seek out United support for this. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense to apply for something if they're not even willing to fly, but they are. They're very interested. And they just know that there's some risk to it. And so, yes, this money is if it's awarded, it will be set aside for the purpose of a revenue guarantee that helps that flight, no pun intended, get off the ground. And, you know, in my objective view, this will be a game changer for the city of Reading and the community. You know, the number of connections between SFO and LAX and Denver, it is actually very different. So while SFO is a major hub at 115 connections, LAX will offer 65, but Denver will offer about 171. Now, these are old numbers before COVID. I don't know if there's been some reallocations, but essentially there is more capacity, more connections at Denver. That hub in Denver is actually a reliable hub to fly into. It is also already eastbound, so you're not having to go south to go east. So you're saving time traveling, and very much like the LA flight, I think it's going to have a success story. So if we do get awarded this grant, we will probably start this new service probably in the peak times, which will be summer. It could start as early as spring 2022, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it started in the summer.
Jim, you use the term revenue guarantee. Can you explain that a bit further on what exactly that means and how that works?
Yeah. So, for example, in March 2019, United had started LA service, and that was backed by the city of Reading and the community with a $1 million revenue guarantee. That is really significant. The revenue guarantee is an important mechanism that allows an airline that essentially when they start a service, they're at risk. And this revenue guarantee helps support them to start this new service, mature that flight, let the community get used to it and enjoy it. And like I said, this community earned that and it really worked.
So it's basically like saying the airlines, if you can't make this money, we're going to pay you anyway, kind of a thing, right?
Yeah. Basically, whatever the delta is, the community comes through and says, "Hey, we want you to succeed. You know, let's fill that gap with this the set of funds, and let's continue this, and let's keep using it. You know, keep this flight active. Let us keep you know, pushing the message out that hey, we got this new service, and allow others to try it. And I tell you what, word got around, and people really enjoyed it.
And Jim, are there certain metrics that the airlines use with regard to load capacity so that if you know a certain community, Reading, for example, is not hitting certain load capacities, United can pull a flight, or if we are hitting certain capacities, they're unable to pull that flight? How does that piece of it work?
Yeah, and that's part of the code that I want to crack. They keep those numbers very close to their chest. There's a lot of proprietary information. It all depends on operational costs. So, fuel it's an unknown, and so that can go up and down. So there's a lot of variables that go into that, and hopefully all the flights are on time and the connections be made. Nothing's canceling. So it's a very intricate system, and they'll know. One of the things that I've learned, because this is certainly not my background. My background is really strong capital project management with like multi-million-dollar capital projects. So not a matter of an airline making money operating out of Reading, is where is that limited resource most profitable, and they do track that stuff. So if it doesn't look like it's going to pencil out, then they could pull a flight and they could move the aircraft somewhere else. So one of the things that's really important to understand is that so long as our community is using this airport, we will have service. And if that grows, then so will the air service.
And Jim, when folks fly out of Reading, many times they'll be dropped off by friends or family, but many times they'll use the parking options at the Reading Municipal Airport as well. How does that work? Is it a safe parking lot? What is the security like? What are the prices like? Just kind of how does parking at RDD work?
Okay, yeah, thank you for that question. So the airport's always been a really good neighborhood, and the reason for that is we have a really good physical presence here. When I came on board about a year and a half ago, a little over that year and a half ago, I noted some deficiencies, and we made some pretty specific enhancements in the way we patrol and respond to things. And we've even tapped technology to help us, supplemented by a security system that we are actually upgrading as we speak. We are doing a lot more by way of camera upgrades that will have more crisp images and that we can zoom, and we're going to be adding more cameras. We generally have no issues at our parking lot. For the past 40 years, this airport has utilized security services from North State Security to cover basically what's needed at the airport 24 hours a day. So, between their training, their attentiveness, their customer service, those things are a muscle that's constantly exercised. And like I said, we're plugged into their efforts in real time. And I'm really pleased with what we've done in the last year.
Great. Thank you. And obviously COVID is impacting travel locally and globally. How has Reading been impacted by this, and how can travelers stay safe while they're flying?
So at the start of the stay at home order, our passenger counts dropped dramatically as folks know, and travel was also a concern that people had, and we were wondering, okay, what are we going to do? This is new ground for me, and how are we going to tackle this? How are we going to sustain, because we needed the user fees? But that's where our industry, the aviation industry, has adapted and actually stepped up to the occasion. So not only did the airport rise to the challenge with the sanitation efforts. I think it was last April that United started their new program, which is called United Clean Plus. And I want to point out that recently United was even recognized for having hospital grade cleanliness and sanitation efforts. And so they achieved a diamond rating. Their aircraft are fitted with HEPA filters that will filter out 99.97% of airborne particles. Their staff will sanitize the entire cabin before the departure. They'll supplement this with using UVC or ultraviolet light wands to help disinfect. And with protocols like not flying when you're sick, and washing your hands frequently and for long enough too, and using hand sanitizer, you know, these protocols really kind of help make it more safe. And, you know, we do provide the hand sanitizer stations throughout the terminal. And if you forget some, you know, we do offer some hand sanitizer in our vending machines that you can take with you. But, you know, and some other things that I know United is doing is they're requiring a mask, you know, basically from the ticket counter and throughout your travel. And I personally feel better flying through these facilities with these high standards and protocols rather than stopping at truck stops or gas stations that don't do what we do. So, you know, it still remains, you know, an encouragement for folks to not travel if they don't need to. But I think between the protocols in place and things that we can do personally, I think we can make it safe to fly and travel.
And one could even make the argument that flying through an airport the size of Reading might even be safer than a larger scale airport in that regard, with fewer folks and fewer touch points.
Certainly, yeah. So if you choose to fly Reading instead of, you know, starting in, say, Sacramento, yeah, I definitely see that argument as well.
So the airport obviously is a busy place, Reading Municipal. You know, Cal Fire uses it heavily during wildfire season. There's charter flights and air school and flying lessons. A lot is happening at RDV. Air Force One has even landed at the Reading Airport. Can you give us a snapshot of what a day in the life of the airport looks like?
Yeah, certainly. So if we're in fire season, which I have seen two of them now, we really rock and roll on a daily basis. Our agency partners that have a through the fence access to the airport, so it's U.S. Forest Service and Cal Fire, they run nonstop. And there are so many operations involved with what they do. It's really incredible. And, you know, our businesses that provide the fuel do a really good job servicing them and maintaining fuel levels. You know, and I do everything that I can to help our partners out, especially when it comes to irregular operations and overflowing aircraft all over the airport that are really needed for their mission here instead of sending them away. And, you know, these efforts can really get taxing. You know, we have a really good dialogue between the Forest Service, Cal Fire, the airport, the local air traffic control tower, and the businesses. I mean, we call each other on a consistent basis. We'll email, we'll text at all hours, we'll meet in person. You know, we're just really lucky to have dedicated and knowledgeable staff of every discipline you can think of. And, you know, each one is extremely dedicated to protecting this community. And it's really, you know, it's a unified approach with common objectives. It's amazing to be part of, and everyone just does the best that they can. And for some of the other operations that you'll see, you know, we will have chartered flights from out of the area. There could be medical operations on a 24-hour basis, whether they're transporting, say, passengers or even organs. We have flight schools at both airports, and you could learn to fly fixed wing or even rotor. You know, helicopter operations will do important survey work throughout the area, and transmission line inspections. Our air cargo, which is FedEx and UPS, they rock and roll too, and they were doing pretty good despite COVID. And we also see military operations. So we'll see, you know, F-15s, F-18s, C-130s, KC-10s, and also VIP movement. Like you mentioned, we've had Air Force One here before. And so airports really are, they support a hub and spoke transportation need for a lot of different missions.
And Jim, are there any limitations on runway length as far as what type of plane the RDD can accommodate?
Well, that's a really good question. So it actually depends on the aircraft. It depends on the temperature, and it depends on, say, an operating agreement. If, let's say, an airline says, hey, we need, or it could be insurance driven, you know, they may say, you know, 7,000 is the max for our regional jet. You know, the military, I know, depending on what it is, if the surface is wet, they want 8,000 feet. And so they won't operate out of Reading if if it's raining here. So it all depends, because if we, say if we're in the winter, you know, we can handle a KC-10 no problem. But in the summertime, when the temperatures are a lot higher, you need more runway to achieve lift. And so there's published minimums for each aircraft, and it depends on a variety of conditions. Now, I know that something of interest for this community when I first got here was a runway extension. And I am very, very supportive of that, because, you know, this last year where I live, I was actually evacuated 3 times. I was literally watching the aircraft firsthand performing their mission. And, you know, and I even before this year, my first fire season, you know, you can imagine what it's like for the crew on the ground. And if it's really windy out, you know, you really do have precious seconds. And if we had a very large air tanker, for example, or VLAT come from out of the area, and when they show up, they can really handle and put out some fire retardant, and they sure do it in style. And when they're done, they have to head back to their point of origination. And it, you know, a 15 or 20 minute flight each way, that it could look very different by the time they're back. So it's my objective to look into what would it take to do a runway extension. We pretty much have the real estate to do it. And, you know, I think having enough runway length and even maybe a safety buffer would be something that I would like to pursue, so that we could support and reload those VLAT. That is what I feel is essentially protecting this community. That's a really big project to take on. The estimates are about $31 million, and I think would definitely complement Reading and you know, by protecting the community and also the region. And I am certainly looking at that.
Wow, that sounds like a really big project, but could potentially be really exciting for the community. Sounds like, especially in fire season.
Yeah.
If I'm just switching gears a little bit, I wanted to talk about Benton Air Park and how they factor into the airports in Reading. How is what Benton does different than RDD, and why does Reading need 2 airports?
Thank you for that question. So Benton is a general aviation airport, and Reading Municipal is an air carrier, it's an air service certified airport. Trying to put it in non-technical terms, but basically we have air service at Reading Municipal. And if we were to have all of those aircraft here at Reading Municipal, the ones at Benton over here, then we would have a lot more congestion and some capacity issues. And in let's just say hypothetically there's a fire season, there can be some economic impacts to businesses because the priority will go to the fire attack aircraft. So having an airport like Benton is actually very beneficial for the city for a number of reasons. One is a general aviation reliever for Reading Municipal. And two, that airport's about 200 feet higher in elevation than Reading Municipal. So when the visibility is really low, the ceilings are really low, the visibility is such where you can't see the runway to Reading Municipal. So air cargo, CHP, other operations will end up going to Benton. That's actually a benefit to have for safety. Also, Benton Air Center provides fuel over there, and they're pursuing a self-serve fuel island. And what's important to note about that new self-service will offer a great place to stop and land for fuel as folks are heading over the mountains. And so, you know, enhancing services there really will help the flying public so that they can stop and get the fuel, stretch their legs, and, you know, pit stop, if you will. That airport also is really busy with rotor aircraft during fire season as well. We still have an outfit that's still using that airport, even right now, for fire service and surveys and stuff like that.
And Jim, what type of numbers are we looking at Benton with regard to folks who use hangars? And I mean, how many personal aircraft are there at Benton?
So we have over 100 hangars, and you know, sometimes you'll have multiple aircraft in a hangar. You know, all of the hangars are fully occupied, and we have maintained for years a waiting list there. So there's definitely demand for that airport. You know, things are a little bit more stringent at Reading Municipal, which is why, you know, I think some, you know, prefer the charm of the general aviation and choose that airport. But it does have its own little economics over there. And CHP loves that airport. They have a fixed wing operation and a rotor. And so there's a really important fixed based operator, and that's Benton Air Center. They provide maintenance on a variety of aircraft. And I think they're even one of four centers in the nation that can service certain aircraft. So there's really some interesting characterizations with characteristics with that airport. It does see a lot of activity, and there's a lot of training over there as well. A lot of training.
What do you see for the future of the Reading Airport? And if you could make the changes you'd like to right now, what would those look like?
So the future of Reading Airports, I can see enhancements coming our way. I really want to make some enhancements to the way people experience flying out of Reading. I want to add more features and things that would make it more enjoyable to fly. I want to make things hassle-free and like I mentioned earlier, touch-free and just easy and it is just painless as possible. And I definitely see more air service options, and I definitely want to do what I can to keep flying affordable. Development of air service takes a lot of time. And like I mentioned, it's typical to start new air service in the peak month. So if we're working really hard to get, say, Denver, and if we do get a grant for that, it won't be until the next year until you actually see that. But these conversations that we have with the airlines is actually on a regular basis. We will actually even go to their headquarters to meet with them. And they don't always accept meetings. So for them to be interested in Reading is number one, saying something. But we're really growing here, and there's things that are changing, and they're really giving Reading a good look. We have an active effort with air service throughout the year and every year, and we're doing different studies. I'm trying to do a little bit things a little bit different. Like we've invested a little bit more this year than we've ever had because we're really trying to double down. And like I said, I'm really trying to be aggressive with this because I want the airport to provide services that this community wants and needs. Now, if I could wave a magic wand, I think it would be that runway extension for the community. I've always viewed airports as a valuable resource for the community. And I think that having a runway extension that can handle larger aircraft like the very large air tankers or VLATs or even military operations that support these kinds of missions, those happen all the time too. I'm looking to make our capabilities more enhanced and basically make air service stronger than it's ever been.
Well, Jim, this has been super informative and interesting on all things airport. Are there any final thoughts or things that you want to make sure the community knows about the airports or that you want to let them know that we haven't discussed yet today?
Well, I want the community to know that they have access to me. I want them to know that I will look into things personally, and I do. I may be busy on a variety of different demands, but I will get back to them and personally. And staff, when they get input, they do tell me. I may not be aware of something, and it could be something that could be easily fixed. And I want to make sure that people know that they can reach out and they can communicate. So if they have input on what we're doing wrong, what we're doing right, I want to hear from them. And I'm one of those that prefers that people give it to me straight. I can take it. So, you know, do reach out to me. My email is pretty simple. It's airports@cityofreading.org. So airports with the S, because we have two, at cityofreading.org. And we can also be reached by phone, 530-224-4321.
Do you have any feedback about the Reading airports? Do you fly out of Reading? Or why don't you fly out of Reading? We would love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@cityofreading.org.